Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a brilliant film. I love the film. But it was about 50 years ago now. But people still have that as a reference point and still see that as like what we do.
So much of the conversation about mental health and well-being at the moment is about talking. It's about conversation. Yeah. It's about humanising people. It's about building a sense of resilience and community around people and so on and so forth. How useful are those tools when we're talking about mental illness?
So we have some patients' families, they don't want to come because they think it's like Arkham Asylum or that it's full of people in cages or whatever. And I don't blame the families and I don't blame anyone for having that opinion because that's all they've been given, right?
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. It's Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle. Welcome to the programme. Welcome to this week's conversation with the brilliant John Barry Waldron. Now, John Barry is a mental health nurse. He works in Essex. And we're going to talk on the programme today about his day-to-day life working in a mental health hospital, dealing with mental illness, dealing with patients, doing his job, and at the same time, recording elements of it for a podcast, the On the Ward podcast, where he speaks to both patients, obviously with the right permissions, and staff to talk through what life is really like and to highlight the fact that when we talk about mental illness and we talk about hospitalization as a result of mental illness, people being sectioned and so on and so forth, we're still talking about human beings. When you picture the conversation around mental health hospitals, you think asylums, maybe you think about Arkham, you think of villains, you think of movies, you think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, padded cells, straitjackets, all of those things for a lot of people will come to mind. And of course, it's not like that at all. And I think deep down, we all kind of knew that. But what does it really look like? What does it really sound like? What are the people who are working there doing? And what's the difference they're able to make to people's lives? Well, that's what this conversation is about, finding out a little bit more about and pointing people listening in the direction of the On the Ward podcast, where you can listen directly to these sorts of conversations and hear a little bit about what goes on inside those walls. Often it's like a, you know, you imagine like a one-way street, don't you, whereby somebody goes in and is never heard of again, and unless there are some sort of villainous super character from a movie. But of course, it's not the case. It's like going into any other hospital. You go in because you need treatment, you get the treatment, and then hopefully then soon you're back in the community, living your life all over again. That's the reality of what we're going to be talking about. So John Barry is our guest. He works out of Essex. His podcast is On the Ward. There's a link at the bottom of the notes for that one, so you can check that out through the Mental Health Monday write-up for this podcast as well. But do find out some more information now. We start off by talking about the differences between mental health and mental illnesses.
Yeah, I suppose that's my kind of field, I guess, is mental illness as opposed to mental health. And I know the two are kind of connected, but they are kind of very separate. So I would kind of categorize it as mental illness would be once it's got to the stage where you can't manage your daily living. Does that make sense? So everybody has mental health. We all need to look after our mental health. And it's very important to do things like mindfulness. But when it approaches the stage where you can't function in, you know, day to day, that's when it kind of drifts off into a mental illness. And that's kind of where I would step in, or the people I work with.
Give us a sense of what that system is that kicks in once a mental illness is diagnosed that might lead someone to having a conversation with someone like yourself.
Well, unfortunately, the system is very slow at the minute, so it's horrendously backlogged, and you know, particularly with the pandemic, we're going to see even more of a backlog. So I think what tends to happen, people have, you know, sort of have symptoms and have problems. They go to the GP first, but call the GP will say, okay, I'll put you in some sort of waiting list, and unfortunately, then by the time they get to me, so once they've reached my stage, so the patients I work with are all sectioned, they've all got really ingrained kind of serious mental illnesses, and they've been deemed to be a danger to themselves or others. So they've gone beyond the stage where they've gone to a GP, they've probably gone to secondary services, they may have ended up in a hospital and not been able to be managed there, so they've ended up in a secure hospital, which is kind of my hospital. So what's happening now, I guess, with the backlog is, unfortunately, we're seeing people a lot more serious a lot later. Does that make sense? So in the past, we may have been able to catch some of these things a bit sooner and be able to like get people in, get them to treatment. But now I think because of the backlog and the pandemic and everything, and the lack of resources, people are being kind of left. And then obviously the problem is way worse when they get to the stage where they need to come into the hospital.
You know, when we talk about sort of general sort of medical services, we talk about hospitals, people might go in for operations and then they're waiting for a space, maybe in a care home
for instance. Yeah. And it's about moving people on and having they call them bed blockers, but they're human beings. It's not the nicest phrase in the world. How does that sit within that mental health world, the mental illness world? Like where are those sort of log jams, if you like?
Well, we're getting both ends. So you're right. So it's very difficult to get in. So to get treatment is very hard. So there's lots of boundaries now where people are like being told they're not ill enough, which is like a terrible thing to say to someone, you know, oh, sorry, that self-harm you did is not serious enough that we can't treat, you know what I mean? So people are beginning to kind of literally knocked away. And then once they're in, getting them out into community teams is very, very difficult. So once someone's in a bed, I don't really know the ins and outs, it's very complicated. But once somebody's in a hospital bed, in a psychiatric hospital, they're kind of dealt with by the NHS. But once they leave, it goes to their local authority, to the community teams. And of course, the community teams are stretched themselves. And so they sometimes don't have resources. They don't have beds for these people to go and live somewhere in like a bed sit or a community or a halfway house. So there's both ends that are being stretched. And what it means is a lot of the time, you'll hear this quite regularly, there isn't a mental health bed in the whole of the UK. So, you know, during the pandemic, they were worried that, you know, there might not be any beds in like general hospital. That happens all the time in mental health. That's like a regular occurrence. There is literally no beds. So if you come in with a mental health crisis, sometimes there'll be nowhere to put you.
On a day-to-day basis, then, in terms of the work you do as a senior staff nurse, tell us about sort of how intense is it? Is it about you? Do you have certain numbers of patients that you have to see at any given time? Is it about the rounds? What would a typical day be like for John Barry Waldron? But how might it be stacked up?
Well, I suppose there is no typical day, as you probably guess. But I'd say that. So I work in a ward of like 16 patients. This is very tricky for me to talk about. So the whole idea of the podcast is try and make the hospital seem not as bad as people think. But then obviously I have to tell the reality. And sometimes there is lots of incidents. Sometimes there is patients that are really kind of severely unwell and do require medication, do require extra help and extra support. And that can be difficult, I guess. But I guess what I'm trying to say is for the patients, day to day. So they wake up, take the medications. They normally have therapy. Go to therapy sessions, they'll come back, have more medication. It's more of a structured kind of routine. And the big, huge thing that we have, a huge part of my job is the patients going on leave. So them leaving the hospital just for an hour or 2 hours or going to town or whatever, that's like a massive part of their recovery. And actually, sometimes it's the most difficult things I have is trying to tell patients maybe they're not quite ready to go on leave. So they'll think that I want to go. And maybe that day they've had a really serious incident, you know, self-harm, or they've hurt someone, and me having to tell them, no, they can't go. That's a really difficult thing.
Straight away, you've challenged one of maybe the preconceptions that people have about psychiatric hospitals, based on the fact that you're there trying to find ways to help people out and about, you know, to get them on day trips. Whereas I think a lot of people presumed it's the padded cells, it's the security, it's the no one allowed to leave their rooms unless, you know, and all those sorts of things as well. And I guess that comes from, well, that comes from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Arkham Asylum and those sort of like cultural references that we've picked up over the years.
Absolutely. Listen, you're absolutely correct. And we still see them now. So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a brilliant film. I love the film. But it was about 50 years ago now. But people still have that as a reference point and still see that as like what we do. So I don't know if you, and it still like pervades now. I don't know if you watch Stranger Things, but the latest season of Stranger Things, in that, which is really good on mental health, by the way. There is some really nice aspects of the way, you know, they treat mental health and about finding your nice place and nice memories. But they do go and visit like a hospital, a psychiatric hospital, and it's a classic old massive building, asylum. And I know it's a fantasy. I know it's set in the 80s and things, but it's like a classic version of what an American, you know, psychiatric system is like. All the patients wearing white coats and kind of sitting there doing nothing. And that was the big thing I wanted to change with the podcast, is to try and show people that the patients' lives don't end when they go into hospital. Yes, they're in hospital, sometimes for a month, sometimes for a long period of time, but they carry on. You know, they have jobs and they do volunteer work and they're helping others. They're doing a podcast. You know, there's lots of things that they're doing, music and art, and their life just doesn't end and then it starts again when they leave hospital. It carries on when they're in hospital.
And they're human beings and they talk and they have conversations. And I guess that's one of the things, isn't it? Where I think people presume if someone has entered an establishment or an institution like that, that's the end, right? That should be the start of something, shouldn't it? Because that's actually, if you go into a hospital with a broken leg, and I know people draw this comparison all the time between mental health and physical health, but people wouldn't go, oh, I won't speak to them, that leg's not going to get any better now that they're in hospital. People go, oh, great, they're getting the help and support and treatment that you require. That's a positive place, and you're obviously in the right place, and fingers crossed, you know, things will improve for you.
And I think it is getting better. So the younger generation are quite they're getting better and they're getting way more into like themselves and knowing themselves and their mind and things like that. So that's becoming a lot better, the conversation about mental health. But I still think we've got a way to go when we talk about serious mental illness. People still have that kind of reservation when it comes to, you know, schizophrenia or bipolar. These are kind of scary words to people, and they're still not as talked about. So I think other things like, say, depression or anxiety, I think people are getting really used to that, which is great. But I think once it gets into like the more serious terms, people still have that kind of reservation. And you talked earlier about people still having that image in their heads. That kind of has a resonance for us. So that affects us on the ward. So like everyone talks about stigma and how it's like vague, general, like, you know, oh, stigma is really bad because people don't understand. But it literally affects the patient. So we have some patients' families, they don't want to come because they think it's like Arkham Asylum or that it's full of people in cages or whatever. And I don't blame the families and I don't blame anyone for having that opinion because that's all they've been given, right? So if you've seen that on the news or, you know, on films, that's what your frame of reference is. So you assume that when you're, you know, a partner or your relative goes into hospital, they're going to be in like a cell and white jacket. And I wouldn't want to go and visit a place like that.
I mean,
so that's why this podcast and other things is like, that's the idea to try and change that, shift that a bit.
Of course, these aren't sort of open spaces for people to go and wander around and change those perceptions. No, yeah. So how can we tackle that stigma? How can we change those perceptions so that people are encouraged to know that these are positive spaces where good things are happening and people are being helped?
Well, I guess the main thing, obviously, is listen to the podcast. No, I'm joking. But no, I think what's going to happen, I think, in the future is people are going to have a lot more of experience of it. So we're going to get a lot more people needing to use hospital, but also people that, you know, they're going to have relatives and friends that might be in hospital and they're going to have to go and visit them. And I think that's really important. That's like the first stage is people just going in and seeing them. I think, unfortunately, the two times anybody ever sees a psychiatric hospital is one, like we said, in movies and films like that, or in a undercover documentary where they're treating the patients really badly. And so that's the two kind of frames of reference that people have. And that's really, you know, not great, because at the end of the day, it's going to stop people coming into hospital. Like, you know, people won't want to seek help if they think that's where they're going to end up.
Can I ask you, we touched on sort of the day-to-day, if you like, of some.
I was a bit vague on that, so I apologize.
No, not at all. And can I ask you about this sort of you mentioned the schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, maybe somebody that you're dealing with. Can I ask you about from a staff point of view, from a nursing point of view, what is the sort of what's the right word for this? Intensity of somebody who might be going through a difficult time. You know, there may be a perception where, and I've been to psychiatric hospitals where occasionally you might hear like a bit of shouting going on in one corner, but like it's, and then it stops. And then you think, well, does that happen all the time? Is that like, can you go and have a regular conversation with somebody and then something else flares a little? What is that sort of intensity like?
I would say like most of the time it's very boring, but in a nice way. So in a nice way, you can go and speak to the patients, you go and talk to them, they're human beings just like you and me. And every now and again, occasionally we'll have kind of flare ups. And it's really strange because the ward sometimes has its own like flux, if you know what I mean. So it'll have periods where there's, you know, it's nice for, you know, weeks, months, and then they'll have a couple of weeks where it all goes very chaotic, because sometimes what'll happen, the patients might bounce off each other. So one patient might be having a bad time and be, like I said, be loud and banging, and that's out for another patient who's very upset, and then some other patient can't get to sleep because these patients are really annoying them. So, you know, it kind of all accumulates, but generally most of the time it's pretty calm, pretty settled. And then every now and again you just have a flare up where a patient would be very upset about something and very angry about something. I'm not giving away anything by saying there was a patient on the podcast who talks about when he was really in his like worst state. He said he used to just like bang, like head bang and walk kind of around he was kind of a bit out of it, and he used to kind of walk around the walls. He used to urinate on the floor, and he used to take showers with his clothes on and things like that, and just that's because he was in this kind of psychotic state and didn't really know what he's doing. But you would have moments of lucidity. So he would come out of that and kind of start talking to you and just talk to you about football or the weather or music. And that's when you've got to get them and try and talk to them as much as you can, because they're the bits that are going to help them when they do go back into that bad state.
You mentioned medication at the start, and I'm sure that you're sort of absolutely thorough in terms of making sure that's all happening. But have you found through the work you've done that actually, you know, so much of the conversation about mental health and well-being at the moment is about talking, it's about conversation, it's about humanizing people, it's about building a sense of resilience and community around people and so on and so forth. How useful are those tools when we're talking about mental illness? Obviously, it's not going to be exactly the same because there's things like medication involved, but those sort of trends, if you like, towards hobbies, activities, getting them involved in different things? How useful are those within a psychiatric hospital?
Extremely useful. So it's a bit like they call medical nursing is like, you know, science, and they sometimes call mental health nursing more of an art. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but sometimes it is. So trying to find the one thing that patient really connects with and really likes is kind of half the job. So once you find out something that patient really likes and really connects with and really enjoys doing, just do that, because that helps them. Obviously, you know, medication is very important and therapy is very important, but that little bit as well. Again, on the podcast, there's a guy who he does music, so he plays music and things like that. And when he goes to his music sessions, the music person who's there doing the music says that he'll often talk about, you know, really deep, kind of meaningful conversations that you wouldn't have with his therapist. So we'll have psychologists on tap, you know, we have loads of people who will talk to him, and he won't talk to them. But when he's doing his music, he will open up and talk to them. Does that make sense? Because maybe he's a bit more comfortable and he doesn't see it as like a sit-down session. It's more of a like a, something he's enjoying to do, and he can write down his thoughts and feelings and things like that. So really important that they find something else that they can connect with.
Do you find when those sort of moments of sort of lucidity of you, if yeah. that's the right word, come, that the walls kind of drop down a little bit, that you can then play someone, you can picture someone then and think, well, actually, this is someone who I could imagine moving back into the community, or, you know, who's got a future which might involve things like, you know, the job or the volunteering work and all that kind of stuff, in a way which doesn't involve you having to deal with them on a day-to-day basis, or doesn't have to involve them, you know, being a regular a patient within this hospital.
Yeah, I mean, again, very cheesy, but like hope is a huge thing, right? So if you see someone who has just that little bit of window where, you know, they're doing okay and they're doing well, and you have that hope that yes, this person can turn it around. And I mentioned that guy at the start, that like, he was one of the worst patients I ever saw. He was like, we generally thought, I don't know if this guy's coming back, and now he is back and he's out and he's, you know, he's in the community and he's doing lots of volunteering, but he comes back every now and again to do like talks for people, and he's like completely transformed his life. And like, I keep in my mind, if he can go from where he was, which was like, it was unbelievable really where he was, to where he is now, is like that's the thing that will keep you going. You know, when you see these patients that are extremely unwell and you're dealing with them and you're thinking, how am I going to turn this around? You keep the back of your mind that, well, you did turn around one guy, so maybe there's hope for everyone.
And that feeds back in, doesn't it, to that One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I think is, you know, part of the plot of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So basically, this is a one-way street.
Yeah. But that's that feeds into, like we said earlier, about that people assume you go there and that's it, we never see you again, you're locked away in some hospital on the edge of town, we'll lock the doors and that's it from you. But that's not what we want. We want people to be going straight back out, not straight back out, but back out as soon as they're ready and able. You know, that's the whole idea, is get them out in the community, get them out, get them seen, get them back in the public, because the longer they spend in hospital, the kind of harder it is for them to go back in.
Yeah,
society, I guess. But.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of understandable, isn't it? Just based on all those things around housing and sort of dependency and all of those sort of things. I think that's absolutely clear. It's interesting, actually, because even from those sort of, I think a lot of the hangups that we've brought from, you know, the Bedlam days or the Arkham days, they're the cultural things that we associate with the straitjackets and the padded cells. And yet, actually, if you go back and look at some of those establishments at that time, a lot of them had like theatre programs and gardening programs and sports day programs as well. That those things were actually very much part of that.
And that world, even though we
kind of forgot about it and brushed it to one side.
I shouldn't really ask how old you are, but I don't know if you're probably.
I'm 40. I'm 40. Right. So yeah,
similar to me. So, but like back in the '80s, like my mom and dad were both nurses, and they're both mental health nurses, and I lived in a hospital. So when they first came over from Ireland, there was staff housing there, so we literally lived on the grounds of the hospital, and it was a huge, great big hospital, and it was fantastic, right? So it had loads of things there, like you said, it had theatres and its own dentistry, and everything was kind of on site. And of course, they closed it, right? So that was the big thing in the 80s. They closed all the big asylums because they thought that they were really bad for people's mental health generally. And I guess, like, they are long term, like keeping patients in that kind of environment, maybe not great. But I think they threw out the baby with the bathwater because they just got closed them all and then put all these patients in the community without the resources. And of course, like, loads of these patients ended up back inside hospitals. So I think there's something in what you're saying, is that yes, like back in the day the hospitals were really bad, but also some of the stuff that we did have, you know, 20-30 years ago, was way better than what we've got now.
Yeah, there's I was at one just recently in the Northwest, and the guy who was giving me the tour was looking at the modern facility, but it was now a housing estate where they sold it off, because it was a huge plot of land just outside Warrington. But there was like a prom that you could promenade, and that was part of the daily sort of routine. And they had like a bandstand where they had like music classes. And they were and then they were talking then about how you could bring that back. Well, how do we take inspiration from what was here before, whilst also fighting that thing that people presume that what was here before was negative, and that that modern facilities were, of course, were so much better. But I think there was that sense of maybe community that existed within maybe some of those establishments.
There were small towns in themselves. Like there were so many patients there and so many staff in the day. It was like its own little community. You're right. It was like its own little town. But I think that the huge thing is that the beds, like literal numbers. So they literally closed all the beds, and now we don't have anywhere to put patients that are seriously unwell. And the tragedy, I guess, is that sometimes you could put patients in, like you'll see a patient, you think, if we got this patient early, we could have got them in for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, and they'd have been out. And now the illness is kind of even more ingrained, that it's going to take much longer to get them out. So they're going to be in hospital for way longer, which is bad for everyone. You know, even if you think of it in financial terms, which is, you know, I don't like doing that, but also it's more of a cost, you know, to keep someone in for longer. So that's why if I was a government minister or something, I'd say build more beds, more hospital, psychiatric hospital beds.
Well, I was going to ask you about this, because there's sort of like there's a government review at the moment into sort of and a consultation in sort of long-term planning, if you like, for mental health. But so much of the conversation is around the well-being side of things. Whereas it strikes me that maybe the voices around mental illness and institutions of psychiatric hospitals and so on and so forth, organizations like that, that very much needs to be heard, because there's clearly two parts to this mental health story at the moment. And we can't just put it all on stress, depression, and anxiety, when actually there are other major infrastructures that will need supporting throughout that period too.
Well, I guess the big thing is, like, being blunt, the wellness thing and stuff is easy, right? So it's easier to tell everybody, well, just go and download a mindfulness app or something. That's quite easy. But to deal with people who've got really ingrained problems and need psychiatric help and beds and maybe need follow-up, you know, help and care when they're back in the community, that's really difficult, and that's really long-term, and that's costly. And so that's why the government aren't interested in that. They're way more interested in saying to you, why don't we have a nice mental health talk day or something like that? I'm not slagging off at all, because I think they're really important too. They are really important. But I think you probably know, but there's lots of people who are talking, then going to try and get help, and they're saying, yeah, sorry, there is no help. You're going to have to wait like 12 months or whatever, get put on some waiting list or do some sort of a Zoom call with someone. But the resources are not there. That's the big thing.
No, and I think it's important that conversation is had, and that people understand, you know, that there's very much a difference there. Let's talk about the podcast itself, by the way, On the Wall. Okay. Just tell me about, tell us about the microphone and putting a microphone in front of people how you've sort of worked that in to
that was very very difficult. So we had to go through our legal team at the hospital, and we consulted mine, their legal team, and we talked to everyone. And basically it was all about capacity. So the patients are sectioned and they do have a mental health problem, but they have capacity as well. So if they understand what they're doing and they have the right to appear on a podcast just like anyone else. So, you know, if they said, yes, I want to appear and I know what it is, and I signed a release form and I know exactly what it's about, then they're just like you and me. They've got as much right as anyone else. And the funniest thing was the patients were the ones who were most up for it. They were like, they wanted to tell their story. They really wanted to talk. And some of the staff were the ones who had kind of apprehensions. I guess just because historically, like, we haven't allowed video cameras in and we haven't allowed recording equipment, I guess because confidentiality and things like that. But I'm coming from a point where, like, we're not going to change people's minds if we don't show them the hospital, right? We're not going to change things. We're not going to make them better if we don't show, like, this is what it's about. So I would have to go in with like a microphone, and you probably hear on the podcast there's some varying levels of sound quality because, you know, you just have to get them on the day. So, you know, one day you'd have to record maybe on the ward, another day we had like a music room, and then another day we'd have to record like, you know, in a shed or something. So it was all kind of very chaotic, and a lot of the times you record a patient and you get some really, really good stuff, and then you'd realize, the audio is not great, but I can't do that again because they've said so much like really important stuff to me. So the practicalities of doing it was quite difficult, but the patients, like I said, were just unanimous. They wanted to appear and they wanted to tell their story.
Absolutely. I did 3 years of uni to get up to the level where you'd remember to record, listen to back. Because sometimes you do interviews.
You have to press it twice. I pressed the button once. No, you have to press it twice. Oh, God.
And the other one is sometimes when you go, and I remember this many times where you do an interview and you're like, oh, great interview. And then you'd come back and there'd be the sound of like something dead obvious, like a ticking clock that would like, would just go, I didn't even hear that. And then that's actually, and you'll have developed this, I'm sure, while you've been doing it, that when you walk into a room, you kind of go, right, you need to open that window, but close that door. Sorts of things.
Well, interestingly, the latest series, so the one that's just coming out now, that one I had like a, so I had like a Zoom, you know, recording device, H4, I don't know if you know, but anyway, so I had this, and for the first couple of series, it was just, I'd have microphones coming out of it, literally talking to the microphones. But now I've got like a thing you go over the top of it, a muff. Don't Google muff, that's all I can say.
I'll put mine on the camera there, there's mine.
But you can now put, I put it on top of the thing, we can walk around. And so now we're kind of picking up the ambient sounds of like the ward. And I thought that's quite important too, because I never realized until listening back to recordings, how many times a door opens and closes, like the office open, you know, there's just so many sounds going on the ward. It kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, it is really loud, isn't it?
But I think this is the joy of audio recordings and podcasts, radio, obviously, for years and years and years, that actually, you know, if you're going into a place where you can't shove a camera in every door and go, look at this, look at this, just the steps down a corridor, people can place themselves in that and go, oh, it's not some hollow, echoey space. It sounds like, you know, what my library sounds like, or it sounds like, you know, it sounds like, you know, you can, if there are cushions in a room, you can hear that there are cushions in the room, as opposed to if you walk through a cathedral, you can hear you're in this huge sort of vaulted space. And I think that's one of the joys of that can take people to a place and paint a picture without, obviously with a little bit of description along the way, but without having to be completely overt around what it looks like and what that person looks like.
But like I say, you can put someone there, they're hearing everything, rather than just pointing the camera at something, they'll just see that, rather than the sound, you've got all of it, you know. But it was really great recording it, and I'm sure you get the same thing. You feel a very what's the word, and again this sounds very Hollywood, but you sound like, once you got their audio recording, I felt like it was almost my duty to get it out. Like, what they've said, so many like really great and important things to me, that I felt like I had to get it out now. So it was like, kind of, it was bigger than me. Like, some of the stuff they were talking about was so personal and so like amazing, and the fact that they wanted to get it out in order that they could help other people was so important to me that this now has to come out.
Give us a sense of the On the Ward podcast, people can go and download and check it out. We'll put a link in the notes to the podcast. Give us a sense of maybe some of the themes of those conversations. What are those things that often, if you put a microphone in front of someone's face, they go, oh, the thing I've always wanted to say is this. Or if you know you're going to be interviewed or someone's going to speak to you, you'll think, oh, I'll make sure this comes across. Have you spotted themes about things that people wanted to get across?
Well, I guess the main one for these guys is like how they've ended up in hospital, or their kind of journey to why they've, you know, been sectioned, or what's happened. And most of them are really kind of thoughtful and hopeful about the future, about where they're going next. So yes, they want to talk about, oh, so this has happened to me, but they're also really mindful about like, well, actually, I'm also doing, like, I'm recording an album, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, or whatever they're doing. They want to talk about what they're doing now, and that was really important for me to show that they're not just their illness. And I was very conscious of not, although it comes up, you know, every now and again, I was very conscious of not specifically saying, right, you've got schizophrenia, this one's got bipolar, tell me about that. It was more about the person. So kind of take away the diagnosis a bit and talk a bit more about, like, well, you know, what does it actually mean to you to hear a voice, or what does it mean to you to have this psychosis? What happens when that happens? And they were really articulate and really kind of brilliant. And I don't think you can get away from hearing it from the actual person. Like, I know maybe you can read transcripts and you can read books, and sometimes you can talk to people that have left hospital, but to get it from people who are actually still there and still living it, I think is like really important.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, more and more so with this sort of like a conversation that people have around experience and lived experiences, that is the phrase that we use now. It's so much more genuine, isn't it? Yeah. And people can see and cut through, you know, if the following is recorded by that, it creates a barrier. And actually what you've done there is you've dropped that barrier down. And said, well, this is, I'm literally holding your hand and guiding you to these people, and they're just going to talk, and then you're going to hit them, and then they'll go, all right, yeah. This is the sound of people talking.
It's fascinating to me because I get lots of feedback. You know, I've done, you know, your kind of podcast, other podcast, radio shows, hearing other people talk about the patients, and they say, oh, they just sound normal. And you go, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they expect people to sound like that they would be extra mad or something. I don't know what the sound of them being, you know what I mean? And people just go, oh, they just sound like a normal person that would be on the street. And you go, yeah, that's what they are. They're human beings like everyone else.
I was going to say, but that's the sound it's working, isn't it? The sound is working because you're going, I know that it sounds perfectly normal because that was the intention of the podcast, to show exactly what it was like. And you know, this is the day-to-day. Go on, you were going to give us an example.
I was on some radio show and the lady said to me, she went, so what are they up to and things like that? I said, oh, it was Halloween and they were going to have a Halloween party. And she went, oh, are they allowed to do that? And I went, what do you mean? And she went, oh, I didn't think they'd be allowed to, you know, dress up for Halloween and things like that. So I guess she assumed that, you know, because they were mentally unwell, that they wouldn't be allowed to dress up as a witch or so. I don't know. But again, and I don't blame that lady for having that opinion. That's just, you know, what she thought, because maybe she thought that people in psychiatric hospitals shouldn't be dressing up as, I don't know, goblins or whatever. But it's just so interesting that she had that thought, you know.
Well, it's interesting because actually it was only probably in the last 3 to 5 years, pandemic, 5 years, let's say five, whatever happened in the last 2 years, let's say 5 years, that we've actually seen, because actually the Halloween costumes would often include the straight jacket, you know, that would be part of the, oh, here's the scariest thing you can be, a lunatic in the asylum. And actually that conversation, but I think enough people have made enough notes to go, actually that's completely different to all this other stuff. I think there's a much wider conversation to be had about
it. It still happens
in that, you know, if we weren't allowed, well, we shouldn't do that because maybe it's not appropriate, but we are allowed to dress as witches, who were essentially women who were intelligent enough to stand up to men in the 12th century or whatever century it was, and men would as a result kill them. I think stigma and historic stigmas go, you know, for 100 years, 200 years, but they also go back 1,000 years as well.
But you're talking about the Halloween costumes and things like that. The reason there are Halloween costumes of people that are from lunatic asylums is because all the movies, the guy would always be from a lunatic asylum. Yeah. So the baddie would always be like some, you know, murderous psychopath killer, would be a mental health patient, you know. I'm thinking of Halloween, the movie he came from, he broke out. And even Joker recently, you know, Joker movie, he ends up in a psychiatric asylum and things like that. And so it's always the baddie, the worst possible person you can absolutely think of has a mental illness, you know. And again, I guess that's probably why there is them uniforms and dressing up things. And I guess we're trying to move away from that, but I don't have the telephone numbers of all the Hollywood producers to tell them that maybe don't do that. But
no, and actually, and it leads us to a nice way to wrap up, which is, of course, to talk about perceptions that some of the patients had about what they were going to experience and how they view their experience, presumably quite positively, about what they've gone through.
I think they do in hospital. No, I can't sugarcoat it, right? So all hospitals are not great. So people, particularly patients that end up in secure care, it's not always going to be a fun time, and it's going to be really difficult for them, really hard. And some of the stuff that happens to them is not great, you know, because sometimes they don't want medication. We have to give them medication. That's really, really difficult thing to do. So it is a challenging and difficult time, but most of the patients I have on the podcast generally kind of get towards the end of it and maybe kind of leaving, so they're kind of more of in a positive place. But they're aware of the stigma more than anyone else, so they know that people don't like people who've been in hospital. Like classic case, we had a guy who was in the hospital, went back home. I think he was from up north somewhere, and I took him home on home leave, and he met someone he hadn't seen in years, and the guy said to him, oh, where have you been? And he said, I've been in prison. So he'd rather say to this guy that, you know, he hadn't seen for a while, that he was in prison than that he was in a psychiatric hospital. And, you know, afterwards I said to him, well, why is that? He said, well, I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to tell him about it because it leads to more questions and more kind of probing. And he said, where at the prison, they'd be like, all right, yeah, we're in prison, you know. But that's so sad that he felt he had to do that to kind of mask where he actually was. And maybe that's the one positive thing that come out of it, is that people aren't as negative about being in hospital.
And actually, it's a good example as well of the fact that if we are busting taboos and myths around mental health and stigma and opening up the conversation, we have to talk about mental ill health. We have to talk about psychiatric hospitals and break those taboos at the same time. There's no point just opening up this wider conversation about it's good to talk to people and all that kind of stuff if we're going to leave some of these organizations and some of these sections within the mental health world, the diverse mental health world, in the corner. we've got to take everybody with us.
Well, again, some, you know, it could be that some people feel like they're excluded. So if everyone's talking about their depression, their anxiety, that's great. And if somebody comes in and starts talking about their psychosis, people tend to go, well, I, you know, we don't know how to deal with that. And the first stage is just talking. And if people feel like they're not being able to talk to their friends or their family about hearing voices or seeing strange things, then they're just going to bottle it up. And I think that, I don't know if it's still a valid stat, but there was a stat where it was something between first symptom and someone being seen by healthcare professionals with psychosis, schizophrenia, is like 8 years. So people will live with it for a long, long time until they decide to tell someone that they're hearing voices or something, you know, is amiss. And that, I put most of it down to stigma. So nobody wants to say that I'm hearing this voice in my head and it's telling me to do things, because they're worried of the reaction that they might get and that they'll be locked up in a hospital, which is not the case, by the way. It's not the case. You know, the hearing voice is a really common thing. It's so much more common than we thought. So, you know, schizophrenia obviously is when it gets to like a stage where it's kind of maybe affecting people's lives, but hearing voices is a huge, like it's way more prevalent than we thought. And it's normally not a problem for lots and lots of different people. Lots of people hear voices and have no issues. We have there was a documentary about stand-up comedians, because apparently they hear like internal voices a lot more than the general public, and they use them. They use the voice and they're really positive and they tell them you did a good set, and that's great. You know, it's only when it gets to the stage where it's unmanageable, that's when we should be intervening.
Absolutely. John Barry, this is the point where we say, where's the podcast available? People normally say, no, all the regular providers, but where's the best place to go and get it?
So all the regular providers. But if you just Google On the Ward podcast, it's the first thing that comes up.
Brilliant stuff, which shows you're doing something right. One, that you've come up with a good name, and two, that you've hit the right algorithm.
Hopefully.
That's a good place to be. John Barry, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you speaking to us today. On what is, by the way, depending on when people are listening to this, the hottest day of the year.
So if anyone does see the
video clip that comes with this, it's a pair of sweaty blokes talking about mental health. But that's a name for another podcast, another day potentially. John Barry, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Mick. Thanks. Great talking to you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.